In this ASI cast, we run a health check on the current state of radio around the world. Richard Marks interviews James Cridland, the radio futurologist, and hears about the growing divide as to the very nature of the medium between the US and pretty much the rest of the world. Whereas the US thinks of radio in terms of AM and FM and is witnessing a medium in decline and contracting, elsewhere, radio is embracing a multi-platform future and is doing very well.
Welcome, James. You emigrated from the UK to Brisbane, down in Australia last year from the UK. So how are you finding life down under, firstly?
Oh, it's lovely. It's warm. It's sunny. Yes, there's lots of lovely things there. The media landscape is interestingly samey and interestingly different. So I've been enjoying spotting the differences in how Australian media works. But it's a wonderful place to be.
So, coming to it fresh, what would you say are the main differences, the main points of contrast with the UK and other countries?
Well, I suppose I'm so used to having a very strong BBC, a very strong public service broadcaster. It's different in Australia, where the ABC for radio only has about a 20% share. And for TV is also fairly small in comparison. So that's a big difference. And I suppose the other big difference is just, because commercial radio itself in Australia is so old and so established, it started in the 1920s. It means that, it's got a lot of history, a lot of tradition. It does things in very interesting and different ways. And that's been very interesting, for a Brit's ears, to hear. Apart from anything else, you can be as biased as you like on Australian media. There are no rules, as there are in the UK, at least, about being fair and balanced and being impartial and everything else. And that's taken quite a bit of getting used to.
I can imagine. I mean, people often comment that, particularly in the radio area, the amazing strength of the BBC. I think the last time I checked, it was around about 45% share of radio listening in the UK, makes it hard to have the UK as some sort of a template for the rest of the world in terms of how radio works.
I think every radio market is different in some ways. There are a lot of similarities. Obviously, if you look at public service radio in places like Denmark, it does tremendously well. All of Europe is, again, slightly different markets. But I think, Australia is pretty close to Canada. Canada is pretty close to the UK, and so on it goes. So I think you'll never get media markets which are identical. But, certainly Australia is closer to the European way of working than the US way of working.
Now, one of the things I was keen to ask you was you describe your role as being a radio futurologist. There's a quote from William Gibson, who the sort of cyberpunk author, I think was the guy who first came up with the phrase the information superhighway. But he once claimed that the future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed, which has an implication that there is kind of a direction of travel for most technology and, by implication, I guess, most media. I mean, looking at the world from your new perspective down under, do you think that the global direction of travel for the radio industry is broadly the same, or is there a lot of regional variation? We've already talked about some, but also, are there some real points of difference? For example, around the time the UK became obsessed with DAB, the US went down the route of paid for satellite radio. So I'm just wondering whether you can hover above and see a direction of travel, or are there some questions that need to be decided to understand where radio is headed?
Well, I mean, I think there are a number of different ways to answer that. The first way of answering that is to have a boring conversation about what radio is, which is probably not the conversation that we want to have now. But it's important because if you look at the US, they have a very different definition of the word radio. Radio to them is something on AM and FM, and that's it. That's very different to everywhere else in the world. And what that means is that the US market is in contraction. It's in decline because, as we're seeing in Europe, as we're seeing in Australia, as we're seeing in many other countries, radio is going far more multi-platform. And so we're seeing much less reliance on AM and FM. It's only 52% of all radio listening in the UK now. You know, it's not the massive thing that it once was. And other forms of radio, you know, other radio platforms are now coming. So I think that's very interesting, because that does show there is definitely a direction of travel. And I think that the US is a weird outlier, in that mostly their large radio companies are run by people who are going bust, who aren't investing in talent, who are working out how to run as many radio stations as they possibly can, as cheaply as they possibly can. And I think that, you know, to an extent, the US is possibly not doing radio any favors, whereas the rest of the world, radio is very strong, in growth, doing very well. Thank you very much.
And how do you know how things like Sirius are doing in the States? Obviously, because that was the big thing, that you could avoid the world of, you know, 16 minutes, I think it is, of ad breaks an hour by having satellite radio in your car. Has that been a hit 10 years on, or is that still, the jury's out on that one?
Well, you know, SiriusXM is earning money. It's in profit. It has a lot of good talent on there. It's got a lot of good output on there. I mean, you know, really, it comes down to the fact that there's no national radio in the US at all. Mm. So all radio is very locally put together, if quite a lot of it is syndicated these days. And that means that if you are driving any distance, it's impossible to listen to the same radio station through your entire drive. So SiriusXM certainly had a benefit there, and certainly also had a benefit from the fact that radio stations in the US haven't controlled their yield very well. So the cost of advertising hasn't gone up in pace with inflation. So what they're essentially doing is that they are trying to squeeze more and more adverts in. Couple that with the PPM, which has encouraged programmers to stop anything which is even vaguely risky, and to focus on doing the safest, most blandest output that they possibly can to keep those PPM figures high, which of course only show people turning off. They don't show people turning on, if you see what I mean. You know, you can always work out why somebody is turned off, but you've no idea why they've actually turned on in the first place. So you end up with this very strange experience in the US, where, you know, 15 years ago, we used to look at the US as being, it's amazing radio, it's the future, it's where we should all be going. Now we look at the US and we go, guys, what are you doing? You know, why are you so behind? But the problem is they don't realize that yet, because they're still very much, it's still a very insular, inward-looking industry there, run by a lot of, you know, dare I say it, at the ripe old age of 46, but run by quite a lot of old people who don't necessarily understand how the world has changed.
I remember there used to be a series of LPs back in the 80s that would take 1 year in music and have the main hits of the year linked with US radio DJs, which, you know, just to preserve that sort of... But also this idea, but yeah, particularly when I was growing up, as you say, American radio was this, you know, sort of aspirational, cool, trendy thing. I mean, you mentioned PPM. I've heard a couple of people mention this apparent correlation between PPM and conservatism in programming. What is it about the difference between PPM and the diary system that used to be in place that in your view is encouraging that? What's different about the data they're getting that's making them go in that direction?
I think, you know, PPM gives you overnight figures if you want them. So you can actually look back through your through what you broadcast yesterday and go, oh, when our presenter did that funny joke at 8:42 in the morning, 3% of our audience switched off. So therefore, let's tell that presenter not to do that funny joke anymore. That's something that you can't do with the diary system, because it's a much more fuzzy arguably much more accurate, but certainly much more fuzzy method of recording radio listening. So you don't end up with those types of knee-jerk reactions. Yeah, I mean, it does mean that, you know, if you're a programmer, you're relying on a diary system, you are much more relying on, you know, on a much more vague gut feeling rather than actual information. But, you know, on the other side, you can certainly point to some of the data that PPM and other electronic measurement systems like it are producing, and basically see that that does take a lot of the element of risk and innovation out of the industry, because all of a sudden you know you do get those instant pieces of feedback. And as I say, the only thing that PPM measures with really good accuracy is people switching off. So we don't know why people switch on, but we can make guesses as to why people switch off. And that's a worryingly negative way to run a radio station. So I think if you compare that with diaries, which of course are still used in the majority of countries and the majority of regions, you know, diaries have some benefits there in terms of what the output is, and also, of course, a lot of benefits in terms of technology. They work with headphones, they work with online, they work in various other places. So they're both flawed, but I think one of them gives you flaws which don't necessarily benefit the radio industry's output.
I mean, it is a tricky one, because if you look at, you know, someone running a website, they've got second by second information. TV has got overnights as well. I hear what you're saying, but it's kind of hard to argue in the long term that less information is going to be better for radio in the way.
No,
that,
I agree. I absolutely agree. So there's this technology called VoiceUp, which is technology being used in the Netherlands for a bunch of radio stations there, and in Spain actually. And what they're measuring in terms of data is they're measuring when listeners turn the radio up, when they when they are more engaged with the output, when they flick back to the app, when they're doing all of this kind of stuff. So for the first time, you're not just getting people switching off, you're actually getting people who are turning the radio up because they're finding what's on the radio really interesting. And it's that kind of data that can really help a programmer, I think, much more so than, you know, I mean, even on the very basics, you know, when do you get your emails? When do you get your text messages or your WhatsApp messages into the studio? What drives people to contact you? Why are they, you know, when do they tune in on the online stream? When do they tune out of that? You know, you've got all of this data anyway at a very macro level. So actually building it into the currency that we go out and sell radio advertising on is a different conversation, I think. I think, you know, there are so many programming tools already out there. Let's use those to make great radio and not necessarily use, you know, a tool which is essentially there to help sell a 30-second ad.
Now, one of the countries that does use PPM is Norway, and over the last couple of ASI radio conferences, we've been tracking their progress towards switching off analog radio, and they're very proud of being the first country in the world to do radio digital switchover. Do you think they're leading the way in that regard? Is it much of a priority anywhere else? I think you mentioned earlier that radio in the US was almost defined by being AM and FM. Do you think FM radio is going the way of analog television, or is it around for a while yet?
Well, let's start with AM radio, which is still in many markets. I have to say, I don't see much of a good future for AM radio. It's very, the sound quality is poor. It's not being included in very many new pieces of equipment these days. I think if you're on AM radio, you need an exit strategy, and you need one quite fast. Once you start looking at FM, it's really interesting seeing what's going on in Norway, and it's interesting to pick holes with the very limited data that we've got so far. So, for example, if you look at NRK's P3 channel, which is their young station, that has so far, in the middle of the FM switch off in Norway, that has so far lost a third of its listeners. And so the first reaction that you get on that is, what a dreadful thing turning off FM has been if that station has lost a third of its audience. And then you realize that actually in Norway, they've moved from 5 stations to 35. Lots of new young stations from the likes of Bauer Media and from other private broadcasters. And so what we're not seeing is people walking away from radio. Right? We're just seeing people walking away from the very limited choice that they once had, because all of a sudden they've got 30 new additional stations that they didn't have in the past. You know, so I think I think it is fascinating to watch. I'm not a particular fan, it has to be said, of government-mandated switch-off. I think it should be led by the market in most cases. But it will be fascinating to see what actually happens at the end of the year once all of the FM is turned off for the major stations, at least. It'll be really interesting seeing what effect that has had. The other interesting nugget of research that I've seen seems to show that radio listening has gone down a little bit, as you would kind of expect, because DAB isn't in all cars yet, certainly in Norway. But on the other side, listening to streaming music like Spotify has also gone down. And is that because instead of having 5 FM stations, I've now got 35, and there's one actually playing some of the music that I really like? Is that a good thing? And one would argue it probably is. You know, so there's very interesting and different ways of reading what the data is. In terms of other countries, the Swiss have said that they are switching FM off in starting in 2020. Other countries are working towards their plan. So places like Belgium and Germany have a plan of a long way off in the future, but they will be turning it off. And the UK has a rather torturous process where they're trying to hit 50% of all listening through digital. And once they do that, and it's about 48% at the moment, and once they do that, then they'll go and talk to the government about whether or not they should be turning off analog. So it's a very sort of long process there. And what I would hope that the government does is the government pats the UK radio industry on the back and says, well done for getting up to 50%. Now we're going to sit and watch what happens in Norway over the next couple of years before we make any rash decisions, because still nobody really knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, so I guess you could argue that rather than necessarily leading the way, Norway is a bit of a canary in a coal mine for everyone to look at and see exactly what does happen. So I guess
I think it is both. And I mean, I think there does come a point where it is ridiculous to keep AM, FM and DAB in quite a few countries all going, all broadcasting exactly the same amount of stuff. So I think that that's absolutely fine. And I think that there is definitely a case for switching off analog when you can. I'm not, as I say, a massive fan of the government telling me when to turn it off, unless I'm NRK, in which case, or the BBC, in which case that's what the government should be doing. But for commercial operators, it should really be up to when the commercial operation feels it makes sense. But, you know, at the end of the day, there are very good, compelling reasons to certainly turn AM off, if not turn some of your FMs off. And the regulatory marketplace in quite a few of the stations, actually in quite a few of the countries, actually makes that quite hard. So it is definitely a place to watch, and definitely, you know, something that will happen over the next 5 years or so.
Now, you're not actually talking to us from Australia, I should reveal to the listeners out there, because you're actually back over in Europe, because you've been organising and actually hosting the hugely successful Next Radio conference in London, which is a big conference that happens every year for the UK commercial and public broadcasters. Looking back, I think the conference was earlier this week on Monday. Now that the dust has settled, what's your main takeaway from the event, having sat through all the papers and liaised with the speakers and everything? So what do you think the main preoccupations of the UK industry are at the moment?
I think what I got out of it was that radio stations are firstly more interested in on-demand audio than they ever have been. A lot of discussion around podcasting, a lot of discussion around on-demand, and also radio stations are becoming cleverer with data. So the BBC was talking about doing testing around images for their radio shows on their website, testing what types of images work better, what types of images actually get more click-throughs and more reaction. BNR News Radio, the big news station in Holland, they were at Next Radio, and they were talking about some of the data that they're using from their mobile streaming app, working out what's engaging audiences, working out what type of information is good, what type of information audiences don't like particularly much. You know, we do an awful lot of research, don't we, on music. We do very little on speech, on talk, because it's very difficult. But actually, you know, the technology is there for us to actually do that now. And so that was really interesting seeing. But I think also, you know, the other interesting side was just, you know, the passion of the wider radio industry, the passion of what people are doing. You know, it always blows me away every single year, just sort of hearing some of the, you know, some of the incredible things that people are working on. You know, so it was wonderful to hear that. There was another example, by the way, from National Prison Radio. There is a prison radio station in the UK. And there was a speaker there who was a prisoner and who was talking very emotionally about how important that was to him, how important it was to him in opening his eyes in terms of reading books and finding out more about the world and everything else. And that was a really powerful thing too.
Mm. No, as an attendee, it was a really, really engaging day, I have to say. So
yeah, well, thank you. And you'll find all the videos are now online for free at next.radio.
Okay, we'll put a link in the show notes, and people will be able to go there and see what they missed. So, well, thanks for your time. We'll let you get back. I think you're in Vienna at the moment, so we'll let you get back to heading back, I guess, to Australia at some point. But thanks for your time, and delegates at the ASI Radio Conference in Nice this November, we'll get to hear from you again, because I think you're kicking off the audio conference with an overview of global radio trends. So we'll see you then, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
You can listen to other ASI Cast interviews by accessing the archive of recordings at asiconferences.com.